May 20th, 2024, Planning Board meeting, Town of Monroe.
B, he's growing into it at the right time. With one coach, his son has been a star. Most of these boys are hot shots. He says, Ross is improving every year. By the time varsity hits, he's going to be right in his prime. So we'll see. At this point, he's learned to get hit, and he learned that it isn't going to hurt as bad as he thought. And he's learning to start to hit. He's not afraid of the ball, but last year he got blown up at Clarence Falls. Kid took him right off his feet, and he got back up. And from that out, he's been okay. He just needed to get hit and realize that it wasn't going to be the end of the world. All righty. Good evening, Mr. Hooper. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Well, since it is officially 7 o'clock, almost, we'll call the Town Rural Planning Board meeting for May 20th to order. 7 p.m. I'm remiss because I forgot to write your name down from the email. Would you mind introducing yourself?
I'm Diana Clow here. lived in Town Hall for most of my life. Kids went to school here, and now I'm come to see what's going on in the real world down here.
This is the wonderful woman who's going to get our minutes all up to date. Which is awesome. So welcome, and thank you very much for taking on this responsibility. We all appreciate it. So,
have fun.
Moving on from this, we have no old business. We have one item under new business. It's an application by James and Suzanne Hooper. It's a sketch plan for subdivision review, cluster subdivision, and do we have someone? Tell us the story.
Yes, I think you all got a copy of my application, correct?
Yeah.
Obviously, there's some things missing in the what would be the sketch plan as the sketch plan is defined in your code today. I met with Jim Martin several times, and Jim and I discussed the fact that if you were to actually do all of the things that the code requires to present at a sketch plan, the average person's going to spend an awful lot of money on surveying and engineering when, you know, the answer could quite simply be, you know, you don't need to even do that because we're not going to allow it type thing. So he suggested that bringing these aerial photos and the map that I put together and go ahead and put my application. So I didn't just disregard what the code says. I met with Mr. Martin and put the best package I could together. I thought possibly my engineer was going to be here tonight, Dan Gosselin. He's worked with the town before. I don't see him. I told him, you know, it's awful early. It didn't matter to me whether he came or not. My objective for tonight is to come out of here with the consensus that it's a reasonable plan, that the town of Monroe would benefit from it. It's solid, and with a laundry list of items that I'm going to need to take care of before we would come back for another meeting. I'm sure it would be at least 2 months before I would come back because I would be taking all of these items that you give me tonight to the engineer and to the surveyor so that the next time we meet, we'd have all of that documentation as well. So,
I think up to this point you're doing very well.
Okay.
Seriously, sometimes it's a little disheartening to see somebody spend a lot of money on engineering. And then we say, okay, but you should do this and this, and then they have to go making changes.
Well, so you may even remember, I mean, I've been down this route before. I had an approved subdivision in, I think it was 2014, on this property, and it was for 4 lots. And what happened was, after it was approved through the entire process, and all I had to do was pay that rec commission fee that goes at the end. That's the last step, is you pay your rec commission fee and bang, it gets stamped. Well, at that point, I had someone come to me and buy the other piece of property on the other side of the farm, and we shelved it because we didn't really want to divide the farm up at that point. So we've been through this before.
I was going to say, there is an active subdivision on this stuff, right? Has it gone to county? Your previous subdivision?
No, we just let it die on the vine.
But there were some lots that were sold.
One.
The one down off the
just Western one road. Lot, which wasn't a subdivision. It was just my right to sell. I think it's every 7 years you're entitled to sell off of Peace.
Right.
So that fell under that as far as, you know, instead of being a subdivision.
And that was done when?
2014.
Okay.
10 years ago.
I thought it was about
that. Yeah, and that house, Dwayne Sprague built that house back there. I'm quite happy with what happened with that, you know. I mean, I wouldn't present this if I didn't think it was going to be better for the town of Monroe and better for our community. I mean, Sue and I are one, I mean, we're not getting any younger. And, you know, we have other options of what we feel like we'd have to, might have to do, which would be sell the entire farm. And the biggest thing, as I mentioned in my narrative there, was we have this program with Adirondack Equine Assisted Psychotherapy. And Shannon Brock, I thought Shannon would be here tonight. She might be here late. I know there were people late at her office. But anyway, right now, she's serving a tremendous amount of people in the mental health community right here in the town of Monroe. Now, not all of her patients are from Monroe, for sure, but a lot of them are. And they use the horses in the therapy, so the horses, it makes sense. The racehorse industry is in dire straits. If you've done any reading about the retired racehorses being shoved to the side and people not taking care of them. So we have a nonprofit on the farm that we founded in 2018, and that's been operating. I mean, we went through COVID, and that really knocked the socks out of us. I mean, essentially, my wife and I have supported that nonprofit now for 5 years, you know, and again, that's another reason that I can't go into retirement and try to support a nonprofit and try to do this, that, and the other without making some changes. And these are the changes that I thought would make the best sense. And a lot of it has to do with Shannon Brock and AE, the Adirondack Assisted Psychotherapy. I want that to keep going, and I want the Inherit the Gold Foundation to keep going and to keep thriving. To do that, what I'm asking to do is let my wife and I build a little house in the back. You know, I'm talking about a 1,600 square foot house. Shannon, I think, wants a very small house. She's got one child. The two houses up front, I've had a couple builders. One of them's on our town board. Mark Stewart has come to me. And I've had another builder from Saratoga. I'm trying to build an equestrian neighborhood. I'm trying to build put a group of four people together that all have an interest in horses. As we get older, it's good, and I would also like to do a little traveling and a little moving around. You have to have people around you. It takes an army to take care of a horse farm, let me tell you. So that's part of my logic here, is that I'm going to get horse people. The back boundary of the two roadside lots will be right up to our pasture and will be horse fence. We're going to put, my wife recommended that we put a smaller fence down on the bottom so that if the people that buy there would have dogs or other small animals, they'll keep them out of our pasture. But what I'm hoping is that it'll be somebody that might want to have a pony or somebody that wants to have a horse or two, and then we'll just put a gate in. And they can use our pasture for their horses, which is becoming a real common and almost need-to-do type thing in the horse industry. Not everyone anymore can afford the 5 to 10 acres it takes to take care of a horse. So if we have neighbors taking care of neighbors, we can keep a few of the four-legged friends around. But the one issue that I saw in there that we talked about with Jeff and I talked about with Jim Martin was the waiver that would be required, and the way I understand it, that section with where it refers to having a plan for sewer and water, the way Jim explained that to me was that was put in really for the big subdivision that's going on over there now, Jacoby's. That's why it was put in there, and he said it was really never meant to say that every cluster subdivision has to meet that requirement, because
you don't have to worry about that. You don't have enough lots.
Okay, and I don't have access anywhere.
No. It's not access is important. I don't know that you're within a half a mile either.
Well, that's what I mean.
But
if
you were within a half a mile, you have to have a certain number of lots.
Oh, it's more lots than that? Okay. So anyway, that one had me a little bit concerned, just because reading it by the letter of the law had me concerned. He assured me that it wasn't really an issue. So. So now, I don't know, John, I don't know where you guys go from here.
Well, no, you've done a good job of explaining it. I'm sure everybody on the board here has some questions, and we'll open it up to the board. If you like, you're welcome to take a seat, or you can stay there if you're more comfortable.
No, my wife's going to take notes.
So what we're going to do is, like we've done before with you, we'll ask you some questions, and you can answer them, and we'll see where we go. And if, Suzanne, if you could take some notes, because we'll be giving you ideas of what would need to be different, or what could work in a different way, okay?
Right. Okay.
I have just one question to start off with.
Yeah.
You're in the R5 there?
Yes.
Okay.
So you're going to build a house in number 4? The back one?
Look at my map. Mine's going to be on 3.
Really?
And I explained that a little bit in there, and then I put a lot of time and effort into those ponds and drainage on the farm. Drainage is critical on a horse farm, or any farm for that matter. And as you, if you look at it, you'll see that I've enclosed both ponds, and you wouldn't know it by looking at this map, but the left side of that lot is sort of like a gorge. It drops off, Dan Irwin prepared this for me several years back, and the top pond actually runs over a spillway down through that gorge, down into the lower pond, which also has a spillway, which releases itself off, you know, my property. I want to control that. And so I guess that's the best way to say I have the top pond, I haven't put any fish in, I swim in it. The bottom pond is stocked with catfish, fish in it. And I enjoy my house being sitting there. I like hearing the water running down through it. So
you're 3 and 4 is spoken for, basically. So
yes.
Selling off one.
Yes. The front two are the two that would be, you know.
And you still be operating the farm and everything?
Yes. Yeah. I'll still supervise, and Shannon will still run down at the farm a lot of it with her operation. My wife will actually.
Shannon's fine. Lot
4. Oh, yeah, Shannon buying lot 4.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it really, I don't mind telling you this because I don't think it matters one way or the other, but our plan is back where lots 3 and 4 come together in the back and off that bottom pond, what we want to do is put a culvert in there so we can access the horse pastures from the back and not have to go out to Route 197.
Okay.
It's a dream of mine to get away from that highway.
Is it a lessons there?
No, we've never.
Therapy.
Yeah, it's therapy, and then we breed racehorses, you know, commercially. We race horses commercially.
Yep.
And we board mostly. Just we don't have much other than the racehorses now. And Shannon's
horses
for
the
therapy.
And the racehorses and the retirees that are coming through for the foundation.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Jim, can you tell us what the lot sizes are?
Yes, the two on the roadside are about 2 acres. I had the square footage on them, and then we made a slight change. These, until I get to the surveyor, right, exact figure I can't give you, but they're about 2. The ones in back are closer to 3. They're like between 3 and 4.
And the balance of land is 22 acres, is that?
There will be, after that's removed from it, it's going to be about 22 acres left.
And Josh, a technical question. Isn't this technically a 5-lot subdivision?
It is.
Okay. Just want to make sure. So the next map or the plan that you would do would include the boundary for the other acreage.
Right. Which that I already have. But it'll have the surveys for all 5 lots. That's what it faces.
Yeah.
So the minimum size lot in an R5 is 5 acres. So this is a cluster subdivision request or application, which means that the request is for the lots to be allowed to be sub-sized, okay, but the density can't be. So what would happen is lots 1 and 2, 3 and 4 would be under the size they need to be, okay? Lot 5 would be obviously... add that in, there's plenty of acres, you know, total, because I think there's enough for 7 lots. Right, you said there's 34?
There probably would be, 34 acres.
So
all 6 lots anyway.
So the big elephant in the room right now is who's going to set up the HOA. We ran into this before when you subdivided. Mm-hmm. All right. If your lots are undersized and you do that, you still have to set aside the other land for that density. So in order to do these in an undersized lot, you've got one, two, three, and four.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm doing the math quick, and if you're right with your 3 acres and your 2 acres, you have four lots subdivided that are 10 acres. That would have to be 20. So there's at least another 20 acres that would have to be set aside for the density. Now that can be done with the other, with number five.
Right.
However, that means number five becomes part of the subdivision and becomes part of the homeowners association that's regulated by the homeowners association that owns lots 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Can you make the HOA be the actual farm?
Yeah,
sure.
I would think so.
I guess that would be up
to the state attorney.
I guess just backing up one step, where is the requirement for an HOA? Jim never mentioned that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. You're not. This is if this is maintained as I mentioned in my notes, maintained as non-developable land, non-subdividable land. They could be each individual lots. There would just have to be some type of restriction on that. Lot five.
So it wouldn't have to have an HOA for it. It would just have to be restricted on the deed that it can be no longer subdivided beyond that point.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Even mentioned.
So the reason I brought up HOA is that's usually how people handle that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that they.
Yeah, because usually it's like a shared type land, so that's probably where he's going with the HOA. This is just going to be preserved as open space, but it's going to be private open space. So that will be added to lot five.
Well, there's one of
so, so it's okay that lot one and two don't have control over the 3 acres that are set aside for that density thing.
Yep,
because all we're worried about is density in that case.
Density,
okay.
Yep.
Hey, that's fine.
Yep.
That's fine.
So the kind of restriction, Josh, I mean, we've got some buildings on it already. It would be that they cannot build anything further.
Yeah.
Is it just not subdivide or not develop or?
Basically, it'd be subdivide. I mentioned in my notes looking at some type of agricultural easement or something in the deed language that protects what it is now. And, you know, that could be working with the board and the applicant can work together on that to see how they're comfortable.
Okay, so an agricultural easement would basically restrict them to continuing the existing operation as a horse farm and a therapeutic center.
Right. Now, one thing that when I talked to Jim Martin about it, again, and I hate to keep referring to Jim, but that's who all my conversations were with, one of the things that I mentioned was that if you look at the map, by the way that I've done this, there could be no further development of that other 20 acres without a variance, because it would require you wouldn't have any frontage, you wouldn't have on the rest of that property, if you look at it now, that's all, there's no place that you're going to be able to put another lot.
That's not true. Does the town own that road?
No.
In front of your place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Frontage there.
Huh?
They only have to have 50 feet.
Oh,
so
50
there is
feet of frontage?
Yeah. They have to have 250 feet at the front of the house, but 50 feet at the road. You have to have enough for ingress egress.
Okay. I guess the other option, and the only reason I'm resistant against this one would be because of the amount of time that I'm afraid it would take, is you can go to the county and I can take the development rights away entirely for that last 20 acres and dedicate it to my nonprofit. Personally, I think that's a little bit overkill. I mean, I think if you look at it like it is and say, there can be no further development of this property, try to show me where there's another lot that you could possibly put on that 20 acres that wouldn't require variance. I'm not sure.
Well, the point is I just showed you where that is. If you go to the right of your barn,
well,
if you go to the right of your main barn,
yeah,
okay, the old freestyle barn, and you put a driveway in there, actually you put a road in and put two more lots down in there.
Okay, yeah.
So that's why it's
okay.
But it's right. And I don't know, when you're saying an ag easement, what are you talking about? Like a development rights sale, a PDR?
Yeah, it needs to maintain principal use of agricultural, and usually that's done through the county.
But usually an ag easement is for property that can be subdivided.
This is very more like a conservation easement.
Yeah, this is more of a conservation easement.
Right, I mean, they turn around and they pay some people for these conservation.
They do, but it's for land that, but they'll only do it for land that not only can be subdivided, but is under pressure to be subdivided. So you could have land and say, hey, my land can be subdivided, and I'd like to sell development rights and be in Corinth, and they're going to go, yeah, not well, okay? Yeah. But if you're on the north way to Clifton Park, they'll be all over
you. Okay. I mean, I guess I'll just ask this question. You don't think that if she and I decide that the... or, you guys decide you don't want this, and we decide that the whole thing's going to go. You don't think it's going to go to a developer? That's up to you.
If you don't think
that's going to go to a developer, I hate to tell
but
you.
But the thing is, that's not our responsibility. That would be up to you guys. You could do that. You could sell it to a developer right now. 34 acres would allow you 6 lots, and you've already used one.
Right.
And I'm not sure how we would count the extra, because I know there's 2 residences there.
Yeah.
At the moment, you have a 2-family, which is allowed, and then you have a second residence. It's grandfathered.
Actually, they're being used for offices now.
Okay, but that would be 1. So you would be allowed 5 more, developer would. And you could do that.
Well, it would just be a shame. I need to see the farm go away and be chopped up like that.
And I think that you probably could talk to Saratoga Plan or one of those groups and see about selling off your development rights. You have a beautiful little spot there, okay?
Yeah.
And you might get more than you think, okay? But then you wouldn't have your lot for yourself. And
right.
I understand what you're doing here. It makes sense, okay? The question I have is, does he have to set aside the whole remaining 22 acres or just the 10 acres that go with those... 8 acres that goes, or 10 acres that go with those 4 lots. If you were to take this piece of or parcel and divide it up as a developer would do,
so
he could probably pull 6 lots.
Yep.
He's looking at 5 right now.
Yep.
All right. So would it make sense to him to subdivide it into 5? All right, or 6?
6, yeah.
And have it subdivided. Right? Even though you don't build it. But have it done and then just lock it down instead of, because what we're asking you to do is lock down that last 22 acres, which you may be willing to do today, but, 10 years from now, you might want to subdivide another lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that would require me to do, which way that would take me. And to be honest, I'm still not sure why, but, I'm willing to go whichever way I have to go. Obviously, I want to spend as little money as possible to try to get it done. I'm trying to build next year. So
I'm just offering that to offer you guys the biggest option you can have.
Yeah.
All right? If you want to do it this way, you do still have to set aside for that density.
When you say set it aside, what are you doing with setting it aside?
It means if you have a 100
acres. Like just drawing up a lot and saying that's lot number 6 or 5 and then saying we're not going to build, that's all we have to do.
We recommend cluster subdivision in the ag zone because we don't want to see a bunch of houses with 5-acre lots.
Right.
But the density is still 5 acres for each home.
Uh-huh.
All right, so let's say you have 100 acres and we'll leave out utilities. You could subdivide that into 20 lots, right? 100 divided by 5 is 20. If you want to put 19 or 20 of them on 1-acre lots, you can set aside that other 80 acres as just set aside, and boom, you've got houses on 1-acre lots, and the land isn't getting actually.
Well, that sounds easy. I mean, that sounds like something we'd be willing to do.
Well,
so
you understand what is set aside?
Yeah, set aside.
It means
we're not physically moving the land.
No. What you're saying, if you could imagine taking this parcel you have right now and drawing those acres to be 5 acres instead, or those lots instead of 2 and 4,
yeah.
2 and 3. If you drew them to be 5, how much area would it cover? Mm-hmm. All right. That has to be still there. It's a density issue.
Oh, and it will be.
Okay.
And it has to be contiguous?
Yes.
Okay, so.
You can't set aside land in 4 acres.
So,
four.
Well, but I mean.
It has to be from the same parcel.
Set aside the part.
No, it doesn't have to be contiguous with each lot. No,
okay.
No. I know.
Just the overall size of the individual.
I think this could be real simple, John.
So it's literally a density thing. You don't have to have 5-acre lots. You do have to have 5 acres of land for each.
Right, I understand that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say to you is you're looking at saying, well, we'll just set aside the 22 acres. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great, but technically you could squeeze another lot out of that. Now, if you don't want to, kudos to you because it's a beautiful little spot there, and it would be a little difficult to build down in there. I get that. Okay.
Well, it isn't going to make it any faster or easier to get through the process, right? So I think I would just do the whole 22 acres.
Okay.
You know, that really means is that 22 acres will always stay as 22 acres. It will never be subdivided down, right?
It would have to have a deed restriction.
Right. It was sold. It gets sold. Right. That's fine. That's.
But in fact, it also in the future, let's say 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Right.
Create an issue with funding, for example, if you want to sell it a lot.
Yeah. Oh, right. Right. There'll be no further subdivisions of it. Well, that's what I was willing to do anyway. I just wanted to do it the simplest way possible.
I just wanted you to know that there was another option. That's all.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, I commend you for doing that to set that aside. So, anybody else?
That's what I mean. Just to clarify, then there would be some kind of not necessarily easement, but a deed restriction.
A deed restriction, yeah.
And you don't have to involve the county with a deed restriction.
No.
Yeah. The deed restriction would limit the use.
Right, right. And we don't want to get into that if we don't have to, you know.
That's right. But you're going to have to anyways.
Okay.
Well, or you're going to have to come up with 5-acre lots. One way or the other, you're going to have to get that density. So
okay.
It's only, that's basically a deed restriction is a legal thing.
That's just getting a lawyer.
It's a lawyer right.
Right. Which I was going to be, that's on my next step anyway.
And
so,
lawyers are always worth the money.
And that gets a little bit over my head. So, but as long as I'm not trying to do anything in the future with that land, I mean, I've even talked about literally, but my kids weren't too happy that I was willing to just give it away and donate it to my nonprofit. But because we only have the 2 children and they're both doing fine, and I really don't care. You know, it's more important to me that farm stays horse farm, or we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, between you and I, farmer, I would tell you that your land, that parcel, is probably worth just as much as a 22-acre parcel as it is subdivided into two more or one
right,
more.
Right, okay. Right.
It's a nice little spot, and it's laid out there nice, and it's on a nice island.
Well, the barns are in good shape now, so it's very usable for a small horse farm.
Right,
not big enough for a big commercial horse farm. So, like, this program that we have going right now is hitting on all cylinders. We only have, what do we have there, 15 horses, maybe?
20.
Maybe 20 with our new babies. But, you know, we're trying to even cut that down a little bit because the more horses you have, the less pasture you have. And I like it to be all green and the horses to be on, you know, it's a little tough with some of the clay and some of the areas of my paddocks. But
lots of pasture right across the road.
Yeah, well, you guys would get rid of, if you get rid of that light company, then you might be able to do something.
Fortunately, we're not allowed to do that.
No, I know.
There's only certain things we can do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's so tough.
Anybody else? Anything else? As far as the concept, anything else? And then we'll move on to what we need to see on site plan.
I think there
are subdivision plans.
So the only thing that I kind of would be more of a suggestion to you is potentially looking to developing HOA.
HOA?
I would look into developing it. Primarily because, let's say, you sell a lot one to people you get along with. They like horses and everything. 2 years down the line, they want to move into somewhere else, right? They now have the opportunity to sell that house without any say in the overall operation, right? You can't stop them from doing it. It's just an acre land they own. So then they can sell to somebody who doesn't give, you know, at all about it. And they just trash the place, for example.
Or who that will sell.
Or who has those dogs that they're willing to run around on, or insert X, Y, or Z, right? And it doesn't need to be an HOA like everyone thinks is an evil, you know, here's a ticket for a garden or grass to buy. It's just an HOA to prevent that exact scenario from occurring, which could easily happen. You know, somebody could move in there and do everything within the codes.
Well, I'm going to be talking to my lawyer about the easement, the agricultural easement, and at the same time, I will ask about that. I'll be honest, in the past, it's always been like, you know, oh man, that gets really expensive. That gets really expensive to put those together. So,
right. It's more about hedging your bets against, you know, 10, 20 years on the line when the group people will move on from that operation. Because they don't have, you know, 1 or 2.
10 years, maybe, I'm not worried about it.
Okay.
20
years. Yeah, I mean, it's just something to think about.
No, I get it. I get it.
They could put in deed restrictions, too, not have an HOA, and then just the lot owners enforce it. Like, if you don't want them to turn the place into something trashy, you know, someone to enforce, you know, the appearance of the lots or whatever.
Like someone to enforce what?
You say you can't park RVs or yachts.
Yeah, that's the question that was
probably
if you are in a subdivision and you all have the same covenants, an individual lot owner can enforce it against the other.
So they would take something in court. You don't have to have an HOA and have the attorney general.
I don't think they're looking for that.
It does make some sort of written document, I'm assuming.
It would have to be in everybody's deed.
Okay.
I own a lot in a subdivision like that.
Yeah, that's a great example. I didn't know that existed.
I'll have to look into it because, to be honest, I'm not real sure if you said, okay, I have to put a homeowners association together. I'm not even sure what I would have in there. You know, what type of things.
Oh,
well, you see, I like this.
Here's my concern with
the right path here.
My concern with the homeowners association with where you're going with this is the fact that you have two lots when this is done.
Yeah. Right.
You have a manager right now. You like her. She could get divorced or married and be gone in a year.
Oh, sure.
And somebody else buys that house, and now you have three people that don't like your horse farm.
Yeah.
That are going to be voting in the HOA. This is where it always comes into problems with doing it with farmland. You take 100 acres, you set aside those 20, and then you got that 80 acres, and the first thing they say is, yeah, that's really nice looking farmland, but I don't want dust or the smell of manure.
Right.
So, you know, in 20 years it grows up to brush. So you haven't really protected the farmland. You've just created a spot that nobody can build a house.
Open space.
Okay, and a tight development area in another spot. So if you could do it through deed restrictions, where it's enforced by the property owners, that would be, as far as I'm concerned, much more preferable.
Yeah, and one of the common ones is requiring a minimum square footage of houses and not allowing them to closet huts as opposed to...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, in our case, I'm probably going to go the other way. My fear is one of the builders is talking about, you know, he builds high-end stuff down in Saratoga, and I'm really not wanting that there, and, you know, it just doesn't blend with what I think the neighborhood is, the farm. But then again, I do realize if you sell two lots to a builder, he's going to sell what he wants. But if we held him to the HOA, so I will look into that for sure.
That's my strong recommendation.
Yeah.
We've done it before back in Illinois, where I was on a farm. We sold a couple acres of 40-acre land, and then the people who moved in there just absolutely destroyed that acre and a half. Run down cars and things. And there's no enforcement because we live in a different county, a different town around the country. So it's something to kind of keep an eye on, especially as you're trying to maintain the image of, you know, what you guys are doing there to prevent it from having one run down location.
Well, we have to do some sort of a start because we are going to have that shared driveway going back to Shannon's, the two in the back. So we're already going to have a lawyer getting into that type of stuff anyway.
Another consideration when the lot sold on the corner next to my farm. It's a nice hilly lot. And my wife was like, oh my God, somebody's going to come build a huge house. And I said, small concerns. I'm more concerned about the people with three teenage sons and dirt bikes.
Yeah, that's right.
Or the organic guy raising pastured pigs that he doesn't have a fence for. Okay,
yeah.
And they're in my fields all the time. So these kind of things you want to, you know, take into consideration that you have a horse farm next to there. So, yeah, if you have a dog, that's great. And you and I both know Ag and Markets law allows you to protect your animals from dogs that are aggressive.
Right.
But that doesn't stop the dog from running back and forth and barking at the horses. I don't know how it affects horses. I know eventually the heifers just go, whatever. And
yeah, they don't affect them too much.
Okay.
The horses are the same way.
Do they get used to it and just go with that?
Yeah, and we'll make sure we have a good fence.
Yeah.
Our biggest problem has been cattle coming over back from old
Morrison's
for quite a few years, but that went away a few years ago. But yeah, we had a lot of cattle in our fields for a while.
I think the concept is really pretty good, but it's, you know, it's a pretty sketchy sketch plan. So,
oh, right.
So if you were to come back with what we would call a preliminary plan, there's always that likelihood that we'll say there's still a lot of stuff missing, and you'll have to
sure, and that's why, like I told you, the engineer and the surveyor, you know, I expect this to. I mean, I don't want to have a bunch of extra meetings. I don't want to burden you guys with a bunch of extra meetings, but I fully expect that, you know, it'll go into the fall or whatever. We're gonna run into a few items that we'll have to get that next time, but at least we can keep it moving. And I just want to make sure tonight that, I guess, What I see is leaving here then would be get the sketch plan together with the surveys and the engineering documents, you know, and
for
then
all five lots.
What's that?
For all five lots.
For all five lots, yeah. So that'll be the survey of the original farm and periphery.
One more thing. I'm just looking at this quick. Lot one. All right. Are you looking at that accessing off of that old road that the town's
No.
On? Okay, no. So here's the thing I would consider. I would consider petitioning to the town and ask them to surrender that section of the road so that you've got somebody there that basically has a road on the property that...
We could have them access it through that if the town would give us it. My thought was I couldn't do it because
we
don't actually...
So you can't do it if... So if the town rescinded that road in that area in front of Lot 1, you would access Lot 1 straight off of 197. Just put a driveway straight in there.
Right.
Right. If you were to decide that I would like them to come in the driveway in front of the farm, take a right, and then go to the road in front of their whole house and turn in there, you can't do that if you take over that road because now you have to bring that lot over to your driveway and share the driveway.
Okay.
Okay, so I was just saying, I honestly think it might be better for you to ask the town if they would surrender that road, all right, and put the driveway, even if they don't, put the driveway straight off 197 across that road, but I don't know how the town would feel about a driveway that crosses.
Well, they could go down past where it ends. It goes past where it ends for their driveway.
Not according to the picture. The picture shows the road almost all the way to the end.
Well, it's close, but
is
right
close?
Past the end of it.
Okay,
is all right. Where I could put the driveway.
Okay,
yeah,
so I don't know how the town would feel about a driveway
the town
would down across the road. And
what's that?
I just didn't know how the town would feel about a driveway coming off Reynolds Road and going across.
Well, yeah, and the way that actually is working, I'm sure the town would love to give me that end of the road. They don't maintain that portion anyway.
Right, right. Well,
they come in off of 197 and the plow trucks go down that sort of section. Right. They never touch that down there. They actually just pile the snow there, right. You know. And it's
what I'm hoping.
It's really not a road anymore, you know. I mean, it's all broken up and everything.
You could technically have that if they do give it to you. You could have that ground up and use for your driveway kind of thing.
Yeah, probably.
So you're not going to have to pay to dispose of that road. I just think that might be a good, clean way to freshen that up. But
we just talk to the highway department.
Yeah, you would want to talk to the highway department, and you would probably have to go in front of the town board and ask them. They'll have to make. But the town highway department would make the recommendation to the town board.
That we're going to give, stop. Basically, they would just stop that road where they do stop it and just take the rest of it and say, and then we would do legal paperwork.
Yes.
You know, because
I
guess.
The town would love to give up the liability. And,
well, as you know, we had a pretty big riff over that road with Todd and I.
Don't remind everybody, just ask. One can always ask and people forget things, so don't bring it up. All right, guys, so let's get a laundry list together for our subdivision plan. We have a map that has all the boundaries for all five lots.
Okay.
We need topos. This is very topographical, this property.
Okay.
So we need topos on it.
And the topos will have to go over that fifth lot, too?
I think you have them. I think you have the topos from the last plan you did.
Well, I would have had to, wouldn't I?
So who was your engineer last?
Yeah, it was Bill.
Call Bill and ask him.
Yeah.
Okay. I know, but you call and ask. It can't.
Bang.
Yes.
Bang would be the answer.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, he's got it. He must have kept his stuff. He wouldn't have gotten rid of everything.
And more than likely he's turned his business over if he's not still doing it and somebody else has it.
And you know, when Dan was out surveying, the engineer that I'm going to use, Dan Gosselin, I don't know if any of you guys know him or not, but anyway, Dan, was he referred to me by Mark Stewart anyway, and Dan came out and we walked the property, and he told me this. I said, you know, there's a big, depending on what level we go to for the environmental review and stuff and the mapping requirements that are come out of this, I said, you know, am I going to end up with engineering bills that are going to be $30,000, $40,000? And he said, no. He said, this shouldn't be that difficult to do. It should just be, you know, the topography. There's no wetlands anywhere on your property, either DEC or anything like that. So he didn't think that drawing up those maps was going to be that difficult.
Five lot subdivision, think acreage-wise, if that triggers Department of Health.
It does.
I think it does. Josh will answer that one. So yeah, you're at least going to have Department of Health involved because it's 5 months.
Right.
It was four.
Yeah.
It's nay on the DOH.
Right.
5 lots, you will.
They call it a realty subdivision. It's fine.
So you said if it was 4 lots, you're good?
Pardon?
You said if it's 4 lots.
Yeah, if it's 4 lots, I think we got.
I think for DOH, you're right. I think 5 is the threshold.
I think there's been a six before.
It's just what I'm going to have to do. I don't think that that's the.
Well, you went through it with the last.
Yeah, I don't remember doing it.
See, it was that painless.
Can we just include lot 3 in this thing? And make it 4 lots subdivision?
DOH's questions are just going to be in the
Oh, I know what you're saying. It make it a 4 lot, but just
make it 4 lot.
Make lot 3 the whole farm and that. I think he's trying to get away from that. I think you're trying to set aside your own homestead separate from.
Oh, I see what you're saying. If I kept lot 2, which is the one I think, is that the one I said we're going to take? Kept lot 3, if I kept that with the other 22 acres. Let me look at it, but I think you're right, John. I'm trying to get my own little place there.
And I would be careful because it's still going to require a set aside on the farm remaining, and then you don't have that other lot. So you, once again, now you're down to only 4 lots. So
you might know what kind of hoops is DOH going to make me jump through?
They're apparently not a lot because you don't even remember from last time.
Don't worry
about it. I don't think it's a big deal, but they have to be informed because you're not going to have a problem because you have enough acres.
Yeah.
Okay, so it comes into, DOH comes in for septic and water. So
yeah, I think that's what it is.
You should be okay with them. Yeah.
Plenty of separation there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So on the plot plan, we did have topography.
Proposed topography.
Proposed house footprint on there.
Do I have to have the proposed location of the home? I wasn't sure of that.
You have to show that a house can be legally placed there.
And meet all those side
right. So you have to show us a house that can be put there where there's 250 feet of frontage, you know, or width at the front of the house.
Yeah.
You have to show that you can get 100 feet of separation between the well and the septic, that kind of stuff.
All those things.
You're not required to match that, but when you build it, the inspector's going to insist that you have 100 feet.
You have to have
all we're doing is making sure that it's there if you build it when you get there. We're not developing lots for you that you can't build them.
Right.
That's
right.
All.
Right.
So,
okay, that's not a problem.
We need to have the neighboring properties owners listed around it.
Yep. I didn't give you all that detail. It's all the tax parcels that are around this. How about across the street? Should I include them as well?
I mean, they're adjacent.
They're across the street's adjacent. Okay.
5 lot subdivision. Do we need DEC? No. I don't think so. Not quite.
Before we start notes, I'm assuming the board is comfortable to move this to preliminary, it sounds like. And in our preliminary, it goes over all the requirements of what would be needed, so I don't think it's really
necessary. Preliminary application, right, I've got that. Right, that spells them out. I mean, it doesn't hurt for us to go over this and you to tell me.
What you're referring to is that we could just say, hey, go start with this, and wait and see what you
do. Yeah, that would cover it.
I like that.
I'm okay with it as long as, you know, if there's anything that you've had in the past, your past experiences where somebody took the preliminary application and misinterpreted, or there's a common thing that people don't normally bring and then they get stuck with that. I think I know what I need.
Well, it seems that, you know, the sketch plan requirements are very similar to preliminary plan
requirements. Right, right.
And the thing you get when you start fulfilling all these requirements is showing that you can situate a house on a lot, for example, might be critical to your decision.
Yeah.
Whether you want to proceed, because we may look at it and say, no, you can't fit a house there.
Right.
Because of wetlands or other, you know, the topography, the grade is bad, you know, whatever.
Well,
that is a risk that exists.
Yeah, of course. Well, and we need to locate the septics then, too, right? Show where the septics that we would use. Show the perk test.
Just show that they can be done.
Which would be, that was part of the perk test, right?
It will require a perk test because you have to show that it can be
right.
Yeah.
So,
but let's be honest, though. The perp tests are, yeah, show it can be done, but if you can't perp, you can always go into an engineered set.
Absolutely.
And that's, but, you know, 18 to 20 more, but it can be done.
When we did it before, and I hate to refer to that too many times, but Joe Patrick and whoever were out there, the engineer at the time when we did the perp test, one of the things they commented to me about was the advantages that I have of having both types of soils there. So I can, and I have a backup. So I can go out and I can find the best location for a septic system with an engineer advising me, and we shouldn't have any problem there either. But if we do, if we're in one area that's just extremely, you know, clay intense, let's say, and this is where, then I'll just do a raised bed.
Yeah, if it's extremely clay, then just go to the sand and grab it and bring it over.
Right, it's on my property. It is. That's the thing. And we know that I can mine so much, I don't know. It's like, I know I can only dig so much sand off my own property.
But the point is, we're just trying to make sure that you don't spend a lot of time and money putting together a subdivision that can't be built.
Right.
You don't want
and
that.
And I don't want that either.
Right. So, and I like what Josh is recommending. Basically, you can come in and sit down with Josh and go through
the
checklist.
Yeah, okay. Before we do the preliminary, right, we'll do like we did with this.
Is there anybody here on this board that has substantial misgivings about this sketch proposal? Something that you would like to throw out that you think is would really be a no gain thing with moving forward with the plan?
I would say it's hard to have misgivings about it because it's really a concept, you know, without the detail. Again, detail's filled in, we might say, oh, you can't put a house in.
Right, no, okay.
I think that's fair.
But in concept.
I understand. And of course, I'm on the other side, we've gone out and walked it, we've talked about, we have a pretty good idea almost. This is where this house is going to be, So I'm ready to put it together. I just wanted to get through this before I actually start writing retainer checks to these guys.
And I guess the other thing I would suggest to, this is a group, that when we think the preliminary plan application is complete, that we actually make a determination of that, because we've gotten in trouble, not trouble, but we've got hung up in times when it wasn't clear when that happened, and then time periods begin to run for us to have a public hearing and for us to give approvals and so on. So I think if we could make a more formal determination, and be to your benefit as well, than we have maybe in the past.
That helps control the timeline.
Yeah.
Right.
The timeline in mind.
Right.
So that helps us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think of it from that. I'm not in a huge hurry, but I don't want to do we don't want to do something stupid where we get to a point and if we have to have the public hearing, we're ready to do that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, you'll have to have a public hearing.
Yeah, I know.
Trying to warn you.
When does that take place? After the preliminary and before the final?
No, during the preliminary.
It's part of the preliminary.
Yeah, and now we've moved. I think we run seeker concurrent with the public hearing. We're supposed to do it, and they've changed the ruling on it. I don't know how you feel about it, but they changed it, and you do like seeker, and then you do the public hearing. So then you're having a public hearing with your seeker all done. I Jim and I went back and forth on it because we kind of enjoy letting the public add to the seeker and present information for it.
Well, but once you declare lead agency, and if you say it's unlisted, you can always amend your seeker decision.
Yeah, so what we've done is we've run a concurrent. We've opened the public hearing and done our seeker while we're in the open public hearing, and it seems to work pretty well.
Okay.
So, right.
Okay.
I think what you heard from the board is that nobody's like absolutely going to stick their head in the ground and plug their ears and go, this idea. So at this point, you've got some homework to do.
Yeah.
Put together a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Put in the detail that you need to put in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And
we can do it.
It's a step then.
Yeah.
So you may come in with a preliminary and you've got a little bit of money invested and you might go, geez, we really can't do it, you've only got a little bit of it. All right, you don't have to do the whole thing, but talk to Josh and he'll work it out, okay?
Okay. Yeah. No, I thank you for your time.
Josh, we probably have a couple moments. We can bring up a couple more things.
I was just going to ask if there's anything from the board.
Yeah.
We're all set with you.
What's that?
We're all set with you. So
okay,
thank you so much.
Yeah. Again, thanks for your time.
And then
look forward to talking to you again.
Yep. Boy, I wish you could get rid of that power company, though. They're not good neighbors. Have you heard the story?
Other whole other thing. Have a good evening, sir.
We have papers here.
Lots of papers right here.
All
right.
Oh, okay.
If you want.
So I've exhausted our agenda, but we do have, you know, time before Mike turns into a pumpkin at 10 o'clock. That is one thing as the secretary and the administrator you're required to do is keep me aware of the time, because at 10 o'clock Mike gets up and leaves.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, we don't have a quorum. The meeting ends at that point. He is the, at that point, he takes over as acting chairman. Because if we don't have a quorum, I call the meeting at that point. Somebody left a phone here on the chair.
I want you to work inside.
Run that out to him, because that's, they'll be back for it probably. So, anyways, Ann, yes, you have the floor.
Josh, welcome. This is your first meeting as our boss.
Yeah, first little meeting.
Anyway, there are a couple things that are maybe like hangover things that might carry over. One was, and I'm sorry, Bradley ran out, but I'll be back. We were considering whether or not we should pursue some traffic study of some of the main roadways in town, including. Maybe updating Route 9 corridor report, or at least looking at it again and determining whether it needs to be updated. And then they're intersecting roads, whether it's Bluebird or Reynolds Road, that we may want to. We're talking about the traffic study you raised a couple months ago, and we were thinking about trying to get organized and seeing what the scope of the traffic study might be. And I think we would kind of start with the existing. Route 9 corridor study that was done, I think it was 2019 or 2014, I think.
And we basically went just one whole town
Reset the standard.
Because we keep coming from one development after another, and incrementally, that one development isn't necessarily tipping the balance in traffic and get all kinds of traffic improvements.
Right.
But we're concerned that we're getting there.
And I agree. It's unfair that traffic studies seem to go out like two intersections. Well, that's all well and good, but people are coming from exit 17 or the bridge over in Glens Falls or Fenimore Bridge or 197 out of Fort Everett. And none of these traffic studies for those most recent projects have triggered a review down to those intersections.
It's effectively once you reach what, 7 or Highway 9?
Route 9.
Once you hit Route 9, it just ends. Yeah. It's like, which way are they going? Like, are they going to the interstate? What's the majority?
And that's the argument, is that you can't, it's hard to tell where they're going to go. So once you get out two or three intersections, it's hard to study. That's great. But that's like saying we shouldn't look for what we lost here because the lights are not. Well, you know, the traffic is still there on Route 9 and exit 17.
And once you do that, you have the percentages based on town population and things that you can. Basically, start assuming that if you add 100 houses here, 41% are going to be going down to exit 17.
Yeah,
before 39 are going over. And then now you can safely assume 100 houses will assume 39 new cars per day, things like that, without having to be like a full on scale. Okay.
And there was another traffic study done many years ago in regards to industrial park. It was done like 30 years ago.
That's part of the GIS.
Yeah, it says something like we can have 12,000 trucks in an hour, in a peak hour. That's like one every. I didn't do the math at the time, but if you looked at the schedule of how many trucks they thought they could handle in a peak hour, it's like one truck every 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's not the GIS I saw.
It's a schedule on there. That's what it says.
But was that for the park, or was that for?
That was for the park.
Okay.
It was the industrial park. At the time, we only saw a piece of the GEIS.
Yeah.
Jim didn't give us the whole thing. He gave us an executive summary.
When that
I never saw a traffic study, but there was a summary of the traffic study and peak hour traffic.
Well, when that study was done for the industrial park, the traffic study review was that they were planning on 400 worker commuter trips during peak and 200 trucks. Okay? That was what they expected for the full build-out of the industrial park, if it was all built out as industrial.
Then the schedule,
and they were also planning on the rail line that's come up at different administrations in the last 30 years of possibly redoing that. I don't know if that ever happened. It's so expensive to restart a rail line.
Yeah, it kind of never happened. So either the schedule that was shown in the executive summary is wrong.
Well, I don't know that it's wrong. I'm just saying that that's what was presented to the public, was that they would expect up to 200 trucks during peak. All right, so
okay.
200 trucks, and that's, you know, that's substantial.
It's a lot of trucks.
Okay, But it's important to keep in mind that even if it was 200 trucks, that that's been included in every single traffic study done in that area since then.
So it probably needs to be updated.
Okay.
Well, verified, confirmed, validated, whatever.
Okay.
It's 30 years old. And that could maybe be done in conjunction with this other sort of traffic study that we're considering. Okay. And maybe we can get some grants to assist us with the study, and maybe some grants then to construct the improvements that will allow further constructive development in the town.
So, with what are you talking about, the industrial park, right?
Well, the industrial park, well, and that's going to, I guess, depend on how the moratorium sorts out and what kind of uses might be put in the various manufacturing industrial areas.
Yeah.
I just plan the two traffic studies I'm aware of.
Yeah.
The one for the park and then the Route 9 corridor.
Yeah,
study.
I've seen that one.
And that's just, again, maybe starting point to determine what else do what do we need.
I think that traffic study for the park was all theoretical, right?
Yes.
It's 200 trucks per hour, we'll call it, on peak hours. Might not be the craziest idea. That might be a reasonable number if you have every lot out there that's moving trucks between the hours of 8 and 5. Or they start their shipments at 8, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not saying it's reasonable or not. I'm just saying we have to, if we're going to have studies, and these are the studies that have been done, we need to consider them in terms of what the gaps are and what kind of study we need to go forward with.
I need a baseline. You need a baseline. So.
Right.
I guess I just don't understand why we're redoing the baseline of the park.
Well, it should be for the Route 9 corridor.
Yeah.
I would say any studies have been done in the town, right?
Yeah.
And
agreed.
If the zoning or if there's something to change at the industrial park, it should coincide with that.
Yeah.
Well,
if there's a change in the zoning of the industrial park, it will require a new traffic study GIS plan. Okay. What concerns me with looking into the GIS for the industrial park is if they look into it and they say, okay, it appears that there's not going to be that much traffic here in this industrial park. That frees up traffic for HACCP new development. Because right now that usage is into every... It's already assumed by every traffic study, 200 trucks. It's already assumed. So,
where have we seen that?
So,
is there another traffic study that made that assumption? That I can see.
I don't know.
Where do we find traffic?
So what you're saying is, are they including that in their traffic study? Because they're supposed to be.
I don't know.
But I don't. You know, I've got to say, I don't know. I don't know that I've seen it. I've always had it in my mind, so I said, well, it's there.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, the only studies I'm aware of that are community based would be that GEIS traffic study and the Route 9 study. So, if we're going to decide some kind of scope of work going forward for a traffic study, we should at least look at those two to know what the gaps are. Are they still valid? Do we need to redo them?
Okay. I'm saying you're basically saying we should hold up and talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I can do
is Route 9, so we can figure that out.
I thought the Route 9 study was pretty thorough, and they had a lot of really good recommendations, that some of which we've talked about, like establishing sidewalks and bike paths and things like that.
Trying to get side access roads to get traffic off there. Interconnectivity, which we kind of struggled to get people to do.
Are we able to build, this is a question from the outside here. Are we able to push for a sidewalk to be built on Route 9?
Yes.
Why don't we do that?
We can require that for accessibility and plans. We just haven't done it right now because nobody's...
I think Old Town Fresh is supposed to do it.
They did.
Yeah.
Old Town Fresh. So when new stuff comes in front of us, we put a sidewalk in.
Yeah. So,
but we can't, call the people with vacant lots and say,
yeah,
we have
fixed chairs in between.
No, I'm saying,
right.
I can't.
Or a bike path.
And you should run across that.
Town could put a sidewalk in on town right of way.
Which is
state won't let you touch it.
I think all
that's why the sewer took so long, because we had to buy right of ways from every property owner along the whole thing in order to put the sewer in.
And I guess connected with that.
That's why the sewer went through the Ag District instead of down Route 9, because Todd said it was faster and cheaper because he wasn't going to have to negotiate with 27 landowners going down Route 9.
Yeah, so I was
But we talked about sidewalks before, too. There was a concern that someone expressed, I can't remember.
Well, who's going to maintain it? And who's going to take care of it once
they put it on the property? If it's required in the development plan and the property owner puts it on their property, yeah, they're required to maintain it.
I've seen other towns like Glens Falls have in their ordinance that if there is a sidewalk adjoining your property, it doesn't have to be on the property, you have an obligation to shovel it. And you're fine if you don't.
We're going to run into that with that subdivision at the park that we're talking about with the trees and the sidewalks and all that. Who's going to do that?
And drive it.
It's in the town's right of way, and they want to hire the HOA to do it. See, that's where you have to be careful. Because mm-hmm. now you're into a liability and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. that was one of the things that with the Saron subdivision, that you have to be very, very careful how you put that together, because of the data that we just said. Who's going to make that?
Wasn't the plan for the main road to be maintained by the highway department?
Yeah, but then they were going to have sidewalks and tree trimmings and all that stuff, and they wanted an HOA to be out there at the town's right away doing the work.
So I thought that was for the back roads to go around
the road. No, that was along the main roads and
everything.
So you're running the and right, that's where you're running the last
college. Sure. Yeah. So we can make a recommendation through Josh to the town board that we would like to see a review, or do you want to see a total
Didn't we do that?
New study for Route 9?
Didn't we do that?
I think we did for Route 9. I'm just asking now.
We did it, but it was, Josh, do you have how many years ago that was? It was at least 5.
Don't, it's,
I mean,
yeah.
It's as the closing of things, I think it's a good one to do.
Okay.
The traffic study for the main roads, the term where
I guess I could ask Josh if he could look at those existing studies and make a recommendation to us.
Yeah,
I could look
at that. I could take a look at them, and I could just write up a quick scope and put it in with your packets next week if you guys want to add, take away, and then maybe we can do a resolution.
And I know you're new here, and maybe you can look at the other thoroughfares, the intersect with 9.
Bluebird, Reynolds.
Because again, we've had a lot of people complain as we've been approving either subdivisions or apartment complexes, like, oh no, you know, we've got already a huge traffic problem here. We have to wait another 2 seconds to get through the light, which feels like an eternity.
Especially
if we're
long
on
the car. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we ran into it with the industrial park when people said you're talking about so many trucks, 50 trucks. All right, and it was over, and they like over 24 hours. Well, first of all, it was only 10. But then you do the math, that's a truck every 6 minutes. It's not really what most people would call traffic. I mean, like my road is now really probably 4 times as much traffic during 3 o'clock hour than it normally has. Now we get almost 8 cars drive by instead of 2.
Okay,
so
a truck every 6 minutes would be a lot.
A truck every 6 minutes means that from the time that you started this conversation, one truck is going by and another one's about to go by.
Yeah, no trucks go by.
Okay, on a truck route, that's nothing. That's really
nothing.
I wanted to bring something up to Mike. Mike, remember that developer, that apartment complex on Harrison Avenue, Skimmerhorn's?
Yeah.
That had the stormwater retention pool right out by the sidewalk.
Correct.
Okay. Did you happen to see that this spring?
Double picture of it.
Because that thing was filled right to the top and was actually flowing over.
Oh, was it?
Okay.
There are pictures.
Right beside the sidewalk. Now, we had asked at the time, could you put a fence, a hedge, a berm, something? And they're like, oh, it won't be necessary. There'll never be water. It was filled right to the top. Kids walking home from Harrison are walking by a 10-foot deep. Right by the sidewalk.
Right by the end of the road. Right. Yep.
So that's something that the building department might want to take a little walk out. And if you want, you can go on Facebook and see the pictures.
It was posted
by a person who obviously has a grudge against Skimmerhorn, but it didn't look like a photoshopped picture.
No,
it was a legitimate picture.
That's a legitimate concern.
Yeah. So here's the thing I'll say, Ann. If you'd like to make a recommendation that we should review the GIS for the industrial park in lieu of the moratorium and the possible rezoning of it.
No, that's not what I'm
saying.
I'm suggesting that in line with the recommendation Bradley made a couple months ago, that we consider a broader traffic study for the town of Dura.
Okay.
And I'm only suggesting that there are 2 existing studies that we should be familiar with, and Josh should be familiar with, to determine what might be the appropriate scope Have we already taken care of a lot of the issues in these prior studies, or have to redo them? I don't know. I've not seen that the study for the industrial park.
Would be okay, well, no, I was going to say, if you wanted to, we could always tell the town, in lieu of your moratorium and your potential rezoning, that it might behoove the town to look at the traffic. I assume they're going to. It'll be part of the process, I would assume.
I would think for sure.
I would think, yeah.
Yeah.
So we could always say that we would feel that the town should look into the traffic. I mean, what's going to happen is they're going to say, hey, you know, that is going to really overload Bluebird and Fort Edward Road, so they're going to have to put a light in and a turn lane or something like that. But if that's what's necessary, that's what's necessary.
Well, the other thing, too, is that as the study is going on with the task force,
right.
In connection with the moratorium, that group or the town board may want their own kind of traffic assessment as part of the
right.
rezoning sure. effort that they're undertaking. In which case, our effort would be premature.
Okay, so you want to just see what we got?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think if we could coordinate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because again, he had a great idea a couple months ago.
Sure.
To work for me. And I still think it's a great idea, and maybe it's something that can be done in coordination with the task force study.
I can get those things together and do a synopsis for you guys for the next meeting, and then we can figure out the best way forward if you want to maybe wait and do it with that rezone.
Yeah, and it might be that if it's coordinated in that fashion, but again, I think we have confronted the issue on occasions in the past couple of years.
Okay.
And we thought, geez, where is that tipping point?
Sure.
Is there some way we can, I guess, prepare for that tipping point? Not be surprised if suddenly freeze development.
Yeah.
Or say, no, this is the last development, the next one is not going to happen.
Sure.
Just being a little bit more forward thinking. And I guess I did see the, as you know, there's a task force.
An advisory board.
Advisory board. Okay. Is it advisory board or committee? Whatever.
It's an advisory board.
undertaking this review of the zoning code. My understanding is that Jen actually rewrote the zoning code over the past 5 years.
He's been working on it.
Yeah, and I guess the only portion he didn't do was the schedules associated with industrial and manufacturing uses. And I saw in the proposed Gantt chart for the schedule for the committee was that the planning board is going to have an opportunity to look at the revised zoning code, but it's in the course of like the last 30 days
mm-hmm.
of this, I guess, now maybe 6 or 7 month period.
Yeah.
And I guess I would wonder whether or not it would be helpful to have some of those zoning code provisions reviewed by the planning board as you progress or sooner than at the very end. And I also see you noted in your report that the planning board is actually required by the statutes and the code
mm-hmm.
to review whatever the town planning board proposes before they adopt it.
The town board proposes, yeah, which has not been the case.
It did not happen. So
that's why we have a zoning code that says that if you have a conservation subdivision, you have to have sewer and water. Well, that's great, but we require a conservation subdivision plan in the ag district, and you're not allowed to have sewer and water.
So
things like that the town board didn't think about, but if it had come in front of the planning board, we would have said, ooh, that doesn't work.
Yeah. So the last subdivision regulation chapter was entirely amended by the town board without conferring with the planning board at all.
Okay.
It was adopted and we found out months later.
It was handed to us. Oh, by the way, here you go.
we learned about it after the fact. I guess I would encourage the committee and yourself to consider bringing this in sooner because 30 days may not be enough time to go over.
Sure.
Now, I know you're going to be focusing mostly on industrial manufacturing first.
Yes.
As opposed to the bulk of the work that Jim has already done. But I personally would love to see what he's done to date.
Sure. Yeah, I can get that for
him. And I think other members of the board would love to help with the balance of that as well.
Okay.
If I understand it correctly, we have a member of this board on the advisory committee. It's Brad Tuka.
Yes.
That's
yes.
taking on the responsibility of representing us on the advisory committee.
Yep.
Sorry, guys. So, no, it's fine. So, I when I saw that, I went for it. But,
fun.
No, to be honest with you, Brad can also bring his stuff you know, as far as if there's things that are coming,
yeah.
He can report to us as each month comes by. But I agree with Ann, handing it to us 30 days before is kind of like, here you go, but you're not going to really have time to look it over and make any real substantial comments or back and forth.
Yeah, and to your point, Bradley, if on occasion during regular monthly meetings, if you want to tell us what's going on.
That's what I was actually just telling him. Like, if every month we have like, a quick update, here's what we're working on, here's the plan, here's what we have.
That would be great.
Let's get back to the plan.
That would be great.
Well.
And then we'll tell you what you have to go back and tell them we want.
Yeah.
Good luck with it.
John Pants, no
middle management is great. Oh, no, I would never do that. Middle management is wonderful. So.
Yeah, that's all I have.
Okay, anybody else?
Well, that B&R Automotive up there on the 9 and Nolan Road.
They did get rid of two cars.
They did?
They did.
Yeah, they got rid of two cars.
And I was like, where's the rest of them?
Well,
are they working on yet?
I'm not really sure. I know
Pete's been busy.
Pete has been looking at that.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. But if you have any questions, you can give me a call after our meeting. So just if you don't want to talk about it at the meeting, but you can give me a call or you can give Pete a call.
Did they go
and we can discuss it with you.
To do the expanded
give our call
area.
I've thought a couple times out, and they don't seem to be moving very fast. So.
No, they just kind of rushed out.
I'll touch base with Pete.
He's handling stuff on Fords Hill Road. He's also handling stuff on Carmella Drive off of Fords Hill Road. There's a subdivision in there. So there's a lot of things he's working on. When we were here for Jim's retirement, he was actually, I believe that was the day he was in court for the Carmella Road one. So, I mean, he is actively doing stuff. I personally believe that enforcement is probably a full-time job. I don't know if Pete would be willing to do it full-time, but it is certainly a full-time job at the moment. And the funny thing is if you start enforcing your code, it enforces itself. Mm-hmm. Once they realize they can't get away with it, then they either move or they clean up their act.
Well,
one or the other.
Well, that will take place on the Fort River Road there, but then you have a couple.
And the Fort River Road there?
No, it's 150 Fort River Road now.
The junkyard on 150 Fort River Road.
Yeah.
I don't know where that is.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Right down.
I was in.
Oh, you're talking about on the straightaway there on the right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pete's aware of that. I don't know if he's done anything with it, but...
Oh, yeah, they've done a lot with it.
Have they? Okay.
That's a...
I thought Matt had asked to make Pete full-time budget year before.
Pete was asked to come in to our meetings and actually... But I don't know if that's part of his contract.
He was supposed to have done a monthly report.
Yeah, but he could do that in a printed form. I don't know if...
He hasn't done anything.
He provides a monthly report to the town board.
He does it to the town, but not to us.
Okay.
All right, but he did come to a couple of our meetings.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's necessary. And like I said, I don't know that he gets paid to do that.
Yeah, I don't think he needs to do that. But Matt did at one point ask that he do a full-time position.
Oh, absolutely.
And
it's definitely a full-time position.
I get the impression they're definitely understaffed in that regard.
Oh, they are. They're understaffed.
Yeah. So, all right.
I mean, like it down here. Something else.
Keeps me busy. I like Mary's Diggle's best. Stuff going on.
That's an auto body. Alright, well then, does anybody else have any board stuff to do while we're on the tape recording here?
Make a motion, we adjourn.
Motion made, second?
Second.
Made and seconded, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Not hearing any opposition, meeting is officially closed at 8:13 to 14. Somewhere around there.
13.
I have to put my glasses away. I'm thinking it's 13, but I'm not sure. I was feeling good at the game today because I could
get
the
scoreboard
across the
room.
All the women are there with their glasses and telling me I need to get your glasses.